Hello, America, and welcome to the Common Sense Show. I'm Dave Hodges. I'm the host. We're the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We hope that you'll make it 1 million because everything we do from social media to podcast to radio, we're all digital. So it's easy to share, and please do that. In particular, with this show, with our guest, Anthony McWhorter, and is a retired corporate attorney, but we're going to be talking about the faith, the Christian faith, and how we Christians are being persecuted. And if a Christian's persecuted in Africa, it's the same in my mind as if it happened here in America because we're a brotherhood. And we're going to get into all of that here. But first, I'll let you know that we're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And with the banks doing what they're doing and the executive orders Trump is coming out with that looks like reset to me, you better find a way to protect your wealth. And by the way, there's 1,000 banks in trouble, according to the FDIC and also the Federal Reserve. They can keep your money, they can keep your retirement. Dodd-Frank 2010 is the law that allows them to do that. I would suggest you let Noble Gold protect you, and they can protect you. How do I know? I've been a customer for over 8 years, an advertiser for nine. I'm going to give you a number to call, 877-646-5347. 877-646-5347. And if you forget the number, all you got to do is remember DaveHodgesGold.com. Well, it's just in time for Christmas. And we're looking at Christian persecution worldwide on the uptick. This is unacceptable, me from a personal point of view. But also, if we talked about Hindus being persecuted, I would have an issue with that too. But particularly, this affects me being a Christian. And our guest is a retired corporate attorney with decades of experience in the field. He's a committed Catholic Christian, best-selling author of Canon Crossfire, the number one book on Amazon in that category. That's fantastic. His name is Matthew McWhorter, and he's here to unpack one of the most urgent issues facing believers today, the global rise of Christian persecution. Matthew, good to have you back on. Really glad to be talking to you about this really important issue. And I got to tell you, there are going to be people that wish we weren't talking about this. And I can tell you that right now. Whenever I've been censored, this is one of the topics that gets me censored when I talk about Christian persecution. Like, we're not supposed to talk about this. Well, we're going to sing about it from the rooftops. But Matthew, I read some of the things that I've seen in your promotional materials, like the banning of public prayer in Quebec and stuff. And I think all this needs to get unpacked here. And so I'm going to ask you, where do you think we should start to help our audience understand how big the problem is?
Well, to be honest, I'd start with my own journey into this, which involved two things, right? Number one was my book involves its scholarship into the earliest church, and I had no intention of uncovering any details about martyrdom or persecution. It's just that as you read my book, I try to find everything the earliest Christians ever said about the books that are in the Catholic Bible, but not the Protestant Bible. So I'm searching through what every early Christian said in the first 450 years, and I just keep stumbling across the fact that this person was martyred, and that person was martyred, and this person was tortured. And all of a sudden, I realized that 7 out of 10 of these people were tortured and killed for their beliefs. That's the beginning of my understanding of martyrdom. Christians sometimes mention that there was a lot of martyrdom going on and persecution. 7 out of 10, I mean, only 3 out of 10 escape it. And then you start realizing that people are joining this church, knowing that the end 7 out of 10 times ends in martyrdom. And it's just realizing those sorts of details as I'm just doing scholarly research into, what people said, and seeing that was part of my journey. Well, the second part is eventually I become Christian. I start going to church. My church has been attacked so many times and nobody knows it. The closest it's come to being publicly reported was one news article that got out because a guy drove a big dump truck right into the back of the church, and that couldn't be kept quiet. So you will find out there on the internet one tiny little 30-second clip on the evening news explaining that this happened, and you'll never hear of it again. And it's because churches actually try not to draw attention to this stuff. They don't want people to realize that they're under attack so often. They don't want to cause angst in the community and lead to further disputes. So they generally don't report these things. If they do talk to the police, it's sort of off the record. They don't want it on the police blotter. They don't want it as part of the report. So I've seen my own church. The windows have been broken. Statues have been attacked. As I say, somebody drove a dump truck into it. There's all this stuff, and most people don't realize this happened. The front doors were broken. Different attacks have occurred, and even in my own community and in my own church, people don't keep track of these things. Don't realize that it all happened. It's just kind of a hidden topic in our society that we pretend like it's not the half of the cycle of Christianity. Like half the cycle is good, like it's been for us for a long time here in the United States, but half the cycle is horrific, as it is for people in Nigeria and elsewhere now.
It's amazing to me that this is happening, but it speaks to a belief that I have that our real opponent in the world is Satan. This is a spiritual war. And when you talk about the attacks on your church, I mean, the physical manifestations of them, not just criticism of the faith, but the physical manifestations of physical attacks, it says to me that things are increasingly getting more violent towards Christians. And I know in foreign countries, it can get really graphic in terms of how Christians are put to death.
And I mean, that's the entire early martyrdoms are just absolutely horrific tortures and deaths. And then you read about it going on today. And if you live here in America, you say, well, that was long ago. That was 2,000 years ago. People don't do that anymore. They're doing it right now. And they're doing it actually in far greater numbers because there are more Christians. The other element, I guess I would say, is, you talk about the satanic. I guess a third part of my journey was outing myself. Here I was, a skeptical lawyer, have all these skeptical or non-Christian or lukewarm Christian friends, etc. And I say, well, I did this book of religious scholarship. I just wanted to know what all the earliest Christians ever said about the books that Catholics have and Protestants don't. My God, the reactions. You just say to somebody, I researched something. If I said I researched, the tradition, the earliest days of professional football. They would just say, oh, wow, that's interesting. That's I wouldn't spend my time doing it, but good, glad you found a hobby. That is not the reaction when you say you did any form of Christian research, etc. It is absolutely hateful. It's astonishing to see it. And it's from people who are not hateful in general. That's not their normal demeanor or anything like that. It just suddenly explodes. And watching that was part of my realization that the psychology of the attacks on Christianity are coming from something else.
I think there's no question, but I know there's calls out of the WEF to rewrite the Christian Bible. Are you aware of that?
I'm not sure what the WEF, but I certainly you
Oh, the
need to
World
read it.
Economic, I'm sorry, the World Economic Forum.
Economic Forum. That's shocking, but because it's not even their job. But you certainly find it in academics. So I've read it. Part of it I was reading Catholic scholarship, Protestant scholarship, Jewish scholarship, but also the skeptical scholarship. And my goodness, the desire to tell you what the real Jesus Christ said is amazing, as they basically reinvent and create a whole new gospel for themselves, calling it the Q document. That's the scholarly lingo. And they just they pick and choose what they want, put it up there, and try to justify it to you. And if you're dumb enough to believe them, you'll think that that's the real Jesus Christ rather than look into their evidence. So that's out there. It's just a matter of who's pushing that agenda, right?
What about the infiltration of the church? Or because I don't think all attacks manifest in a physical form. What do you think?
That's exactly what I try to tell people is if you look at the very earliest church, or and today, you'll see that, yes, they're concerned about government persecution. Certainly they're concerned about criminal acts by, not by the government, but by people who hate you, attacking you, vandalism, murder, etc., arson. But they're really afraid. They'll endure that. They will go to their deaths with that. What they're terrified of is the basically propaganda, misinformation, and taking over the gospel message, distorting who Christians really are, what we really believe, what we should believe, what the apostles really taught. All of that is just the worst form of persecution, really, because it draws good people away from the truth. It gives them a partial truth, a half truth. And the answer to that, it's actually dealt with in the Bible, like the epistles of John, I know, talk about it. The answer is go back to the beginning. Go back to what was authentic, taught in the beginning. That's the authentic. Everything coming later, you got to be careful of it, and try to research it, because so many people will just say, as we just talked about, they'll say that, well, I have the real gospel here. Those four gospels that have been handed down by the churches of the world, those are the fake gospels. I have the real gospel over here. And Why would you believe that? Just because he says it. Look into the evidence, look into what is authentic, go back to what is authentic, and you will find the truth.
Did a show with a friend of mine, Doug Thornton, the other day. We call it the Doug and Dave Intel Report. And one of the things that we discussed was infiltration into the legitimate Christian church based on biblical principles and scripture by the people who are masquerading as pastors and promoting a positive psychology gospel. Is that a subtle form of invading the faith, not manifesting so physically, but are you concerned about that as well?
Oh, 100%. And here I'm in Columbus, Ohio, and a couple of years ago there was a constitutional amendment voted on by the citizens about abortion, for example. So what the pro-abortion side did was use a whole bunch of religious imagery, even using Catholic images for the pro-abortion, not the anti-abortion, but using the pro-Catholic, using Catholic imagery as part of their messaging. Like, this is a designed campaign. In that case, or in the case you're talking about, in many other cases, it's all over the place. They're trying to use the Christian, window dressing to dress up their message, pretend that that's the real Christianity, and pull you away. Again, this has gone on from the beginning of time. You'll read about it in the Book of Revelations about the seven churches, and some of which are filled with heresy and false teaching, and the need to be on your guard. And focus on what you were taught originally and go back to the beginning. It all comes down. We've never lived in a society where it was easier to double check something. And yet it is so rare that people actually double check things. You have to be one of the people who double checks. Don't just accept somebody's view. As you say, they're masquerading as pastors. They claim to be talking Christianity, but they're not. You have to look into it yourself and find out what's really going on, right?
Well, I see him bootstrap. Like, I'll hear the story about David's courage, taking on Goliath and what a great leader he was. And then they bootstrap it into the positive psychology without scriptural reference. And that's where they lose me.
Well, and they'll do similar things on virtually anything from the Bible, but turn the cheek, for example, turn the cheek. Like, Jesus didn't turn his cheek when he was slapped. That statement doesn't mean quite what they're saying, etc. But they'll use that, to say you Christians shouldn't fight back, you Christians shouldn't defend yourselves in court, your Christians shouldn't assert your rights. Jesus asserted his rights. He didn't, it. The Christian message is not passively letting other people take over and destroy the world. That is not our message. But you'll see people try that one. They're just different examples. As you say, this bootstrapping, they pull one piece of the Bible and say, that's close enough to my message. And I'm going to use that to try to drive this propaganda campaign to use misinformation to get the Christians to wrongly abandon the true Christian faith.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's deal with a couple of political examples of this. Quebec, as I mentioned at the top, they have a new law against public prayer. Can you talk about the specifics?
It sounds like a great law when they sell it to you. It's about separation of church and state. I mean, what could be better than that? We all want that. How very American of them, almost, right? Well, their way of separating it is to forbid the use of religious symbols and attire by anybody in a public space. So you can't be a cop, you can't be a judge, you can't be a lawyer, you can't be a teacher, you can't be anybody if you wear religious imagery. Lots of religions insist on wearing religious imagery at all times. Jews wear yarmulkes, Sikhs wear turbans, Catholics wear crucifixes and other accoutrements. You are basically saying that such people are absolutely forbidden from participating in our government forevermore. And that's the effect of that kind of law when people are like, well, I don't want that Catholic cop or that Sikh cop or that Jewish cop to inflict his religion on other people. That's not what he was doing. He merely was wearing his stuff. And that's the part that this begins. So when I talk to like legislators and I try to explain the cycle of persecution, it starts with what sounds like a good seeming law, separation of church and state. However, as that law gets rolled out in practice, Christians suddenly realize that they are being persecuted. Their rights are being stripped from them. But by the time they realize this, they're criminals. And now all of a sudden, everything is reframed. You're not debating whether or not this should be a law, et cetera. You're already, subjected to it. You are trying to violate the law. Why won't you comply with the law? Suddenly everything shifts. And what you will find is the persecution isn't the law. it's the enforcement of the law that follows it. You know, the torture and the killing that would come in the earliest church, or the imprisonment and fines that comes in the modern day, come because you're a criminal. They criminalize your beliefs, even though you didn't do anything wrong. They didn't engage in an act that actually hurt somebody. They merely wore their traditional garments or items. That is now viewed as a horrible harm caused to other people, and that these religious people are now criminals who need to be punished. And because they refuse to comply, because they you know that resistance to this law, the penalties get harsher and harsher until it becomes a full persecution.
I can't argue with that. Let's go to another place in the crown in United Kingdom. And I actually have seen a video of this happening. So this is absolutely factual. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
United Kingdom arrests for silent prayers. And you mentioned Isabel von Spruce, a Catholic campaigner. Let's talk about that case.
Yeah, so the first thing I think people generally know this, but of the 49 out of 50 states, the only one being Louisiana, 49 of them, our law basically is English law adopted in the United States. But it starts, you know, you will occasionally be in an American court where we're analyzing a 700-year-old English case, because when we broke away from England, we just continued with the laws we already had. England is the single closest jurisdiction on God's green earth to American law and American concepts. And here you have true thought crime. You are silently praying. If you were silently, you know, screaming obscenities to yourself, that's not a crime. It is silently praying that is a crime. It is one of the most shocking things I ever read. Again, I just imagine that every adult in the Western world would say that's horrible. Why on earth would you be doing make that a crime? But they did, as you say, woman outside of an abortion clinic. And you see what becomes the persecution. She kept doing it. And they're like, well, you won't obey the law. And she said, this is my religion. I'm going to keep praying. And they just keep saying, well, if you're not going to obey the law, we're going to increase the penalties and increase the penalties and increase the penalties, because they're trying to demand that she give up her religion. And they're just going to keep increasing the penalty until she does or she dies from it. And that is exactly what you'll see in Pontius Pilate dealing with Jesus. It's what you see in the earliest church. We have judicial opinions from the Roman Empire and letters, et cetera, from people who were doing the persecuting, saying, I tried so hard to get this Christian to just burn incense. I tried so hard to get this Jew to just eat pork. I tried so hard, but they wouldn't do it, so I had to torture him and kill him. And that's kind of what you're seeing over there. They're actually talking about harsher and harsher laws, same in Quebec. It's a cycle because you become a criminal.
Well, to be a policeman who would enforce this, and I actually saw this on a video. Were you praying? Well, yes, I was. Well, you're under arrest. I'm thinking these policemen have to be Pontius Pilate to do stuff like
But
this.
you have to be remember to be Christian, though. Try to understand that cop and his point of view, because he's not necessarily a bad person. In every other aspect of his life, he may be a wonderful person. He may even be a Christian who looks at this and says, well, I'm a Christian and I don't have to do that. You'll find maybe a Baptist or somebody who would say in Quebec that, I don't have to wear a crucifix. This Catholic's telling me he does. I think that's superstition. I think that's wrong. They could actually become the meanest persecutors. Because to them, they say, well, my Christian true Christianity doesn't involve this craziness. So why would I, accommodate this guy, et cetera? The cop made his view. He's enforcing the law and he's dealing with somebody who is absolutely refusing to just shut up or just walk away or just whatever and say the words, just sacrifice, just eat the pork, et cetera. And they just view you more and more as a criminal who won't obey, no different from a drug addict. Or a thief who just keeps selling drugs, buying drugs, or stealing stuff, the penalties just get harsher and harsher. And their view is you're just not complying. And it could happen to anybody that's in that mode. The key is to break out of the cycle, to realize that it's a cycle. And as you say, then step back as the cop, look at this and say, my God, this is horrible. I need to stop. But it's that first step. It's that step backwards of looking at the big picture for a second and realizing what's going on. That doesn't occur, and we have to try to do that.
Going back to that law in the UK, is there a distance where if you're inside that distance, they'll arrest you for praying, but outside that distance, they won't?
So they call them buffer zones. So yes, they try that concept. Note that the buffer zones will just expand over time. That's whatever always happens with these things. But second, also notice that the buffer zone prohibits, as you say, silent prayer. You're walking past praying. That's within the buffer zone. Sorry. So now if you are the sort who prays as you walk around, you must walk around the buffer zone. You had a right throughout all of the last 1,000 years of English history to walk where you pleased and pray where you pleased. You lost that right. That's one thing. But second is that they're now arresting people for preaching the gospel within a buffer zone. So if they established a buffer zone and you have a church nearby and you preach the gospel, you have violated the
Oh.
law, even though you never said one word about abortion. You're
Which is
within the buffer zone and you're banned. So we're now seeing a pastor in England who's been arrested just for preaching the gospel, have nothing to do with abortion. Like, and this stuff just expands and gets worse and worse again. Because they see the people as criminals. They stop seeing them as, you know, he's a pastor preaching religion. We have always allowed this for 1,000 years. He's not a criminal. All of a sudden, he is a criminal because he's within the buffer zone.
That's an incredible story. That's very Soviet of them, the way you just described how a church can be inside that zone.
And how fast it happened.
Have they
Like, you know, here
designated?
we were thinking of England as our closest neighbors mentally, et cetera. And all of a sudden, overnight, they're doing this. Who
Yeah.
would have imagined, you know?
Yeah, well, for a lot of reasons, including stuff like this, my wife and I have determined we have no interest in going to the UK. And who knows? With the things I've said about some of their practices of violating what we consider to be civil liberties and human rights, I might get arrested when I step off the plane. So, it's not really in my best interest to go there.
Well,
Is
now,
there,
just
is
on
there?
that note, I also tell other people because you see these things in the news, somebody's arrested for something. Is that really what they were arrested for? Like, you know, that Dave Hodges gets off the plane and they found a, you know, a bag full of drugs. Dave Hodges gets off the plane and they find a bag full of pornography. Like, is that really why they arrested Dave Hodges? Did he actually have that stuff in his bag, et cetera? Like, persecution frequently is disguised, and you have to be careful about this stuff and not just believe whatever the story is. You know, in the Soviet Empire, et cetera, the police just arrested somebody in the middle of the night. They didn't arrest you during the day. You just disappeared. And then they spread the rumor about why you disappeared the next day. And suddenly your own family thinks you're a child molester or a criminal, drug dealer, et cetera, because that's what the government says. And you're not around to debate it anymore. You're just off in the gulag.
That's amazing. One of the things, though, and I don't know if you're aware of these studies on prayer, but they're defeated before they even start. They've had these prayers of praying for people, first name, last initial only, undisclosed hospitals, and they had control group, experimental group. One hospital's not prayed for, one hospital is prayed for. And then they found, and there were three successive studies, and I don't think they met the level of significance because they need to do more research, but they found in the hospitals that were prayed for, the survival rate for these chronic conditions was double what it was in the control group where there wasn't prayer. So distance doesn't make a difference because this was praying at a distance. And so the faith works at a distance. It doesn't work by footage from some target zone next to some kind of clinic. But to me, if I were stopped in America, because I don't know English law, and if a cop said, "Were you praying?" and I'm saying, "Do you have a search warrant for my thoughts? Because if not, I have a right to remain silent. My thoughts are private." I think they'd have a hard time enforcing that here in this country.
You would hope, but number one, understand that that depends on judges. And you know, just on the topic of abortion, whatever anybody's opinion is, when I was born, there was absolutely no constitutional right to abortion. Shortly thereafter, there was an absolute right to abortion that could not be restricted in any way. By the time I was an adult, it was a constitutional right, but you could restrict it somewhat. And now it is back to not being a constitutional right at all. Not one word of the Constitution has changed. Whatever your view is on it, understand not one word of the Constitution changed. It's just judges. They decided whether you had a right or didn't have a right, and you only have the rights as long as a judge is willing to stand up for you. And again, you
Interesting,
deal
yeah.
with the one thing of this woman, she just kept going back. And, you know, I don't know all the circumstances, et cetera, but she feels that her religion compels her to go back and pray silently, and that is now a crime, is the real thing that people should focus on. I understand you might not go there. Maybe you're not pro, you know, anti pro-life, anti-abortion. Okay. Maybe you are, but you'll pray at home. Maybe you know, maybe you would try the tactic you had. She didn't. the point to be made is none of that really matters. It's that she was praying silently and people decided that somehow that's a crime. That's the point that we should be focused
No, I
on.
agree. I agree with you entirely.
Not that, but it's just one of these things that they're trying to shift your mindset, right? To that she's being ridiculous, she's being unfair. That's where the persecution starts. That's where the cop says, "Look, lady, I told you 5 times to move on. You didn't move on." He's no longer interested in her rights. He's interested in her shutting up and doing what he said, which is move on, right? And it's her lack of compliance that becomes the problem when the real question is, why does she have to comply?
Yeah, no, I totally hear what you're saying and I agree with you. But to me, this is a symptom of a bigger problem. If you can eliminate, it's like a cancer that's going to grow. If you can eliminate within a zone any type of Christian practice and ever, you can expand the zone to pretty soon you can't be a Christian at all.
Totally. And so as one example in Quebec now, I think it's in Quebec, if I remember right, there's a proposed law. They haven't passed it, but it's expected to pass, that you will need a government permit in order to engage in any form of public preaching. Because it's government property. You're on the street, you're in a park, it's government property. So is that not government endorsing you? If you're allowed to just walk around preaching your religion? Like, oh my God, are your rights being slaughtered as you watch, what's going on in these things, but it's always portrayed as a good thing. And it's always portrayed as, why wouldn't you comply? What kind of monster is out there, violating the law, like drug addicts, et cetera. Like the point is, this should never have been a law. And when you look back at the, as I say, the cycles of persecution, the Christian, freedom of religion, the ability to practice your religion is a right that we've had. And what happens is that gets portrayed as now being harmful, and something else is now portrayed as a right that this Christianity is inflicting on. That is the change that suddenly occurs, and all the next thing you know, there's a law restricting what has always been a right forever. So instead of saying to people, "Well, look, you're on a public street, people could talk to you about whatever they want. That's the way walking around in public goes," you now have, well, I have a right to not be bothered by somebody who says something, Christian. Like, can I bother you about Trump and politics? Can I bother you about, something else? Yes, but I can't bother you about religion. You see these things. Ultimately, the effect of these things is just disastrous on Christians and Christian communities. And the key is to just be on your guard, see the red flags, and stand up for it, and stand up for people, even when you don't agree with them. Maybe you don't agree with the woman silently praying out of an abortion clinic, but realize what's at stake with her stance and how that's eventually going to come and hurt you.
That is, wow. All I got to say is it's Stalin reincarnated with that bill that you said in Canada hasn't passed yet, that they can say you are zoned out of practicing your faith. And that's what they did in the Soviet Union. They zoned out the churches.
Exactly. And the next thing you know, because of that, only the churches that the government likes get permits, right? And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse until the next thing you know, Christians are an underground religion of criminals, right?
There you go. That's what Germany, Nazi Germany, used the church, and when you didn't conform as a pastor, they hung you.
Exactly.
And that's, you just wonder how far this is going to go. Okay, so we've looked at Canada, we looked at the UK, we know this goes on in France as well. What kind of instances are we seeing here in America that should concern us?
I mean, you go back to COVID, right? And the pandemic had all sorts of restrictions, and you saw restrictions on, religious assemblies where they said, "Well, that's not essential." So you have either non-Christians say that there's no need for Christians to meet on Sundays, but sometimes even worse, again, are Christians who themselves are okay with not going to church on Sunday. For whatever reason, they're okay with just watching on TV or whatever. And then they look at these other Christians who say, "No. I believe I have to go to church on Sunday, maybe to receive the Eucharist or whatever, but I have to go to church." And they're saying, "Well, you're just being unreasonable. That's superstition. That's this, that." They don't accept that that's their true belief. That is what they want to do. That is what they believe they have to do. And so the next thing you know, you have pastors going to jail or being fined massive amounts for not complying with these laws when their view is they can't comply. And all that's happened is that A, somebody has panicked over a disease, and B, they have relegated religion to non-essential. When to the people who are religious, it is the most essential of essentials. People outside say that it's not essential and lump it. So, that got pushed back. And I believe mostly that got overturned over time as people said, no, religion is essential. You have to put it in that category. But even that is saying you put it in the essential category. That's a way, kind of a getting a government permit, right? Even having that discussion about that is already a bit of a problem there. That's one example. Things continue throughout time. The one that got me most concerned recently was that there are laws that are meant to prohibit people from badgering or otherwise, forcing children's decisions about transgender surgeries or something. And those have a lot of different impacts, et cetera. But one of the crucial things is that the law actually basically will throw the pastor in jail if the minor comes to the pastor and says, "Well, what does our religion say about this?" You try to explain it to them. That's a crime, because you're involved in this attempt to influence their behavior, et cetera. Like that is a shocking thing to where you're not allowed to advise your own parishioners on what your religion says, et cetera. That again, for whatever reason, people voted for these laws. They thought it was a good thing, but you see the immediate implication is to start throwing pastors in jail.
Well, it's
Other
not just
examples.
pastors, it's also parents in California, according to their
Yeah,
law.
totally. And you can get into more of a discussion of whether that's child abuse, et cetera. That's why I focus on the pastor. But no, absolutely. It's any person. It's a neighbor. It's a concerned, relative. It's anybody. Hate speech is another example of where, all of a sudden they're looking into the thought crime behind your actual crime and trying to punish you more for it. And sometimes, what they're calling a hate crime is just a religious activity in any normal past historical context, and now they're labeling it as a hate crime and upping the penalties, et cetera. Again, the real problem, the real persecution comes in from the fact that these people will not comply because of their religious beliefs, and you are making them criminals solely because of those religious beliefs and not because they actually committed a what should have been a crime in the first place.
I hear what you're saying. By the way, I think this bill passed, if I'm not mistaken. But Congress may have outlawed that practice of putting pastors and parents and others in jail for advising kids contrary to what they're being advised to do.
Yeah,
So
hopefully.
I mean that's soon going to be a federal law. To me, no government has the right unless there's abuse involved to tell parents how to raise their kids in any way, shape, or form.
I agree with you, and I would love to be able to say that that is absolutely what our country and our Constitution stands for, and the judges enforce that, but that is not, that's a daily fight. Over lots of things, you can find 1,000
That's
quotes from
true.
people basically saying otherwise. They view a large fraction of what I would consider to be normal parenting sometimes as child abuse, et cetera. And the practical experience of people, because I had some in the last 5 years of with people who are accused of child abuse. If you are accused, it's all over. Because from that point forward, the judge will say, well, in the best interest of the child are just to get the child away from you. That's it. You didn't have to be proven guilty. It's that, well, the best interest of the child, you've been accused. That's it. And so the situation I had involved a father accusing the mother of child abuse so that the father got possession of the child. And the mother's basically had no right to defend herself because while the trial to determine whether she was abusive was waiting, the best interest of the child to get the child away from this alleged abuser. And so for 1 year, she was deprived of her child on that basis. Like it is somewhat shocking if you're an outsider who's never dealt with that process, how nasty that process can be. It's unfortunate. And it is, as I say, a possible form of persecution in some cases.
Oh no, listen, I've had two cases that I've been a part of where I've tried to help as a participant in a fundraiser. One was involving a lady in Fort Collins, Colorado named Stacy, and she had had a child. The relationship ended before the birth, and the father wanted nothing to do with the child. But as soon as Stacy started taking politically unpopular decisions to try to stop this action from happening or that action from happening, the courts came and took her kid. No allegations made of wrongdoing, except you're acting like a sovereign citizen. That was the only thing that was really said to her. Okay, well, I wasn't successful in helping to get that kid back. Then I had a lady in the State Department that pretty similar situations where she was a conservative serving in a left-wing department of the State Department, and somehow the police, and she knows who was behind it, showed up at her door and took her kid with no allegations, no wrongdoing, no arrest, no court date. And we raised quite a bit of money to help overcome Virginia's, I forget what they call it. It's the same as CPS, but something with family services is what they call it. But I have seen that, Matthew. I've seen that firsthand. I've been a participant in it
And it's
where,
a good example of all their neighbors believe the police, right? You know, like everybody, well, you're accused, you're this, you're that, your child was taken away, you must have done something. Like,
That's right.
no, that's not what happened. And you know, it's so hard for people, I think. You know, we're so well trained to obey authority and understand authority, but like, you know, until she gets her day in court and can fight over it, don't believe the allegations against her or what's actually going on, but unfortunately, everybody does.
Oh, the day in court. I mean, this is how corrupt Fort Collins is. With Stacy, she's in court fighting for a kid. Now, she'd already been on my show maybe three times. And we actually had her on with a couple of attorneys to give legal opinions. And she goes back into court, and the judge started chastising her for being an unfit parent for daring to come on my show. I'm not making this up. This is a true story. I had a couple of friends that were sitting in the courtroom that happened, and I was getting calls while the session was underway, and they stepped out to the hallway to call me to say, you're being implicated in some kind of criminal influence here.
That's shocking. And but it's not surprising. It's shocking but not surprising given what else I saw. And again, I only really know about this because I had a friend who had to deal with it. But like most people don't understand that, don't realize how abusive that process can be. And how it's inflicted on people who are not child abusers, it's inflicted as a manner of persecution.
CPS is to me, and I'll say is, and I mean all 50 states, they are an anti-Christian, anti-parent, pro-humanist outfit, and they make money when they take kids away, and that part has been proven. But I judge their behavior as being pure satanic. I really do.
It's again, you get into people, well, I'm just enforcing the law, I'm doing this, I'm that, and then you have some bad actors who are doing far worse than that, but you have a lot of people who are misguidedly thinking that they are protecting the child when what they're really doing is removing the child from its mother, which is a matter of harm far greater than what they, you know, set out to deal with in the first place. But it's just one example again of how this cycle of persecution goes because you're viewed as a criminal. Your behavior, you know, or your refusal to, you know, the woman's refusal to stop coming on your show, to stop holding the views that she holds. It's her thought crime that is the real problem here, and they're going to inflict penalties higher and higher until she complies.
Well, I even had th this has even happened too. The Larimer County sheriffs that are the jurisdictional authority in Fort Collins actually called me. And I said, "What's the purpose for your call?" And they said, "Well, we believe you might be making threats to the father in this Stacy case." And I said, "I've never talked to the father." And I said, "The father does not deserve to have custody if the mom hasn't committed any kind of crime and he's never been a part, hasn't paid child support in 8 years." So I said, "That's what I've said." I said, "If you view that as a threat, well, then you have to do what you have to do." But it was amazing that they even had the nerve to call me when I'm 1,000 miles away. And I mean, this is how abusive the system has become with parental rights. And I look at it as really the same thing that you're talking about here with, abuse of the Christian religion, because family is at the heart, of Christianity. I mean, for me and mine, we choose to serve the Lord, and this is a real issue. And actually, too, in the case of the second person I told you about, they got chastised for Christian faith. You're a Christian zealot is what they were told.
And again, ultimate communism, somewhat socialism, as these things start portray, you know, filtering through our society, is a belief that the family should not exist, that children belong to the state, that they raise them, that they do them. And what you ultimately saw is that they will teach your children to turn against you. And that's something else that I've encountered with the family process, et cetera, is, you know, they're Attempting to influence the child to get the child to testify against the mother, et cetera, is a real risk, a real serious concern. It's happened many times throughout history of psychologists and others sort of planting things in the child's head, and that's another way that this becomes persecution. It all comes down to red flags. It all comes down to Christians understanding, we are a large voting block in our society. We have the ability to stop these things, but you have to recognize that these things occur so that you're not sort of reflexively pro-government on, well, you were accused. So why would I stand up for her? I don't hold her political beliefs, so why would I stand up for her when she's facing persecution for her political beliefs, et cetera? You have to stand up for people's rights. And if you don't, you won't have any yourself.
Yeah, well, first they came for the parent. I mean, it's just to me, it's stunning that we're looking at this. And I think you just mentioned something I wanted to get into were solutions, and you just mentioned one right there. One, we got to make people realize of the faith that we're all in this boat together. And when people are arrested for their thoughts, or CPS does some kind of abuse and they use the Christian religion against a parent, we're all involved in that. We're all attacked by this. Why do you think the clergy doesn't make this more of an issue than they should?
I mean, just because you're a clergyman doesn't mean you really understand how the world works and how this all goes. So I've run into that a few times myself of trying to explain to them, I'm a lawyer. I know how the laws get enforced, and somebody's not a criminal just because they're accused, et cetera. But that's how people are raised and trained. And we even see, prosecutors and others, they're making public statements about somebody that they are have charged with a crime. Like, the person didn't get their day in court. You don't know that they're actually the criminal that the prosecutor's claiming they are, et cetera. So that's one thing. I think also there's a sort of a Christian desire to be accommodating, to be, sympathetic and understanding to all viewpoints, et cetera. And, at some point there is a time to stand up. I mentioned earlier about turning the other cheek, because it's amazing how many people don't realize that Jesus was slapped and he didn't turn the other cheek. That's not what actually happened. He said to turn the other cheek because in a certain time and place, that is the right response. But in his own circumstance, when he was slapped by the soldier, he says, "Why do you slap me? I did nothing wrong." That is a perfectly fine response. He stands up for himself. And not everybody sort of recognizes that this is a time to stand up for ourselves. It's not a time to be sympathetic and understanding. It is a matter of persecution that's going on. Again, maybe because they don't hold the beliefs of the person who's being persecuted, et cetera. But you have to just see the red flag and recognize what's going on and then stand up for what's right in those circumstances. And as you say, even the clergy will fail to do so, far too frequently.
You said something very early on that I want to expand on because I agree with what you said, that we continued old English law. And because it's happening over there doesn't mean it's going to come here. Do you think that what we're seeing in the UK, Canada, and France is a precursor of what's coming here? And how do you think it'll manifest if you do?
I guarantee it's coming here. It's a question of how much we defend ourselves and prevent it. But, you can't tell me there's not some small town in Oregon or California or New York that's not going to try it, right? That sort of mindset already exists here. It's just a question of who's in power and who's going to try it, and whether the courts will stand up to it, whether our politicians will stand up to it, whether we will recognize the danger and stop it. But to some extent, this stuff already exists in, campus conduct laws, et cetera, on campus. You've seen that. We saw it, immediately occur with, and again, in my view, a case where our pastors and ministers and priests let us down was in COVID, where they meekly accepted, bans on church, et cetera. I don't think that was the right answer at that time. And even if it was the right answer, the answer I think should have been, we decide that we're not going to have services on Sunday because we do it, not because the government says it. And then, you can, it ends in the same result, but it's a radically different, mental and legal framework of saying that's our decision. We see the risk from COVID, we'll shut down rather than the government's decision. But again, I think it's already here. It's just a matter of how bad it will become before this cycle passes and we get back to respecting freedom of religion more
I think you're
than
right.
how
You
we
know,
do.
one thing you triggered a memory in me. I forget who the pastor was, but he attempted to hold church in a drive-in theater they rented. Do you remember that?
And
so here, the only people exposing each other would be the people in your own car, which are also the people in your own home. So there's no increased risk of transmission whatsoever. And yet the police came in and arrested the pastor.
But that's where you're thinking of it wrong, because you're thinking of it, there's no risk of transmission, there's no reality to this crime. From the state's perspective, that is somebody disobeying. That is somebody who refuses to comply, refuses to submit. It is the Christian refusal to submit that is the person that becomes the persecution. It is Jesus refusing to do what the Jew over and over, people come to Christ saying, "This is all going to end with you being crucified." And he said, "Yeah, I know." And he keeps going. It is the refusal to submit. And that, as I say, to Pontius Pilate, he didn't persecute Jesus for his religious beliefs. He persecuted him or punished him for failing to submit, failing to obey.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective, and I appreciate the other thing that you find too, and this was disturbing. Nancy Pelosi getting her hair done during that period, and Newsom dining at his favorite French restaurant with friends over and over and over. And it's just like rules for thee, but not for me, and the Christians are not for thee. So that was the problem I had with that whole scenario.
And that should be a wake-up call for those of us, because you hear it all the time, like, "Oh, we're a Christian society. We have a Judeo-Christian background. We got that." Not everybody does, and you only have it as long as you stand up for it and vote for
There you
people
go.
who insist on it. As soon as you don't, out the window.
Well, Thomas Jefferson said every generation what? Said we might have to have a revolution every generation to keep our rights. And yeah, I think you're really correct in bringing that up. Well, look, I want to let people have access to the book you've written if they've not heard about it before, and I want to bring that to people's attention. I know you said it's available on Amazon, right?
Yes, it is. My website, Canon Crossfire, so it's Canon of Scripture, Canon Crossfire, .com will send you to wherever you can get the cheapest price for whatever kind of book you have. I have large print audiobooks for those who can't read, hardcover paperbacks, and Amazon has the Kindle version, plus the paperback and hardbacks. And check out the website. It has a free preview of the book. I just wanted to know what everybody ever said about those books that the Catholics have and the Protestants didn't. I couldn't find the book, so I had to write it, research it, and write it myself.
Well, I don't think in going far into the future you're going to be alone if the persecution increases. At least I hope that's not the case here. And Christians do need to unite as a voting block. I totally agree with what you're saying. And I just don't understand. I mean, here's one thing that disturbs me too. Not to make this political, but kind of has to be. The Democrats years ago took God out of their party platform. So why would any Christian ever vote for an organization that has disrespected the Creator? Does that make sense to you?
Well, and it's one sign, right? It's by itself, I guess you might be able to say, "Well, okay, whatever. It's just one little word in their platform." But it's a sign of what's the deeper things. It's the tip of the iceberg. It's showing you what's really there, and it is, as you say, shocking. But it is something we have to deal with. We talked earlier about the propaganda and misinformation campaigns. People who are not very Christian pretend to be Christian and say, "Well, I'm okay with that. I'm a, this, that, the other thing." And you have to recognize what you're dealing with and understand that they're not really the core. If you ask me to guess on the future is a streamlined church, because all the people who have joined Christianity thinking that it's good for their social life or this, that, the other thing are going to walk out the door when as the persecution gets worse and worse, and as the view of being a Christian becomes harsher. You're gonna have to decide, do you really believe or not? And ultimately, we'll have a church of people who believe again.
One of the things I've come across with data, it talks about the mega churches and how they're collapsing financially and in terms of people attending. Like with Joel Osteen, the Lakewood Church in Houston, they've declined by 50%. And I don't wish bad things on people, but what I read a study that said that they researched, it was actually commissioned by a mega church, and they found that people in mega churches don't grow spiritually. They enjoy the experience while they have it, but then COVID came along and people didn't come back. And the study said two reasons here. Technology is one. People found out they could have an easy way of worshiping by technology. But the main thing is they really didn't miss it because they weren't growing. Spiritually, and I found that to be really interesting. So the infiltrations into our church and the effects, I mean, Satan doesn't take a day off. He's pretty clever, and I'm just I think we're beginning to see all the ways that this happened. And I appreciate the work you're doing. We need more people like you, Matthew, doing what you're doing to bring Christians into an awareness. And Christians, first of all, you need to get right with Jesus. Then you put on the armor of God, and we got to fight this battle.
Absolutely. And like you said, the hardest part is the person right next to you realizing that they're the ones subverting it, with the message that isn't really Christian. But that's where you got to stand up for what you believe and what you were taught and what Jesus preached.
Yeah, that's right on the point there. Well, Matthew, I really appreciate you spending time with us here in this critical time in our country as we're really at a pivot point in many directions, and that includes our faith. And people, if you're not willing to stand up for your faith, you may not have it long. Matthew, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless you. My name is Dave Hodges. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We have a show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Don't miss out on the opportunity of a lifetime with Bitcoin and crypto being artificially repressed by MicroStrategy on behalf of JP Morgan. This is soon going to end because the rich will have bought up what they want, and you'll be buying up at a higher price unless you act now. I use my digital money. You should too. Go to mydigitalmoney.com. That's mydigitalmoney.com, and take advantage of this once in a lifetime opportunity. Well, we have a really interesting note here, and this should get good old Chucky Schumer impeached from office. There's no question, absolutely no question whatsoever. He wants to impeach Trump for blowing drug boats out of the water. Let's take a look at what they show here on screen, and maybe Schumer wants to keep his mouth shut.
Law Enforcement Act of 1986, authored by a member of Congress in 1986 from the state of New York. His name, Chuck Schumer. He wrote the law to pass almost unanimously that makes it legal to blow drug boats out of the water. It happened in the 80s a lot, the 90s a lot. Go ahead. Look it up, folks. Chuck Schumer, the author of this bill that made what we're doing with Venezuelan drug boats fully legal. We don't need permission from the rest of the world. Chuck Schumer gave us that in 1986.
And they're saying this is a violation of the War Powers Act. Trump's acting unconstitutionally. He should be tried as a criminal. Well, I'm sorry, but this law gives Trump the permission to do it. And Chuck Schumer, of all people who wants Trump impeached for this, for following his directive from 1986. And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. If this isn't a clear example of Trump derangement syndrome, I don't know what is. This clearly, clearly highlights what the heck is wrong with the Democrats. You know, back in the 80s, you had differences between Democrats and Republicans, but you could work with them. Today, there's no working with them. All they know are lies and obfuscation and more lies. And it's all about breaking apart this government so they can install their communist utopia. There's no question about this. And Schumer is pandering to the AOC radicalized branch of the Democratic Party with this nonsense. He can't say, well, the president is acting constitutionally because we gave him the authority in 1986. 39 years ago, Schumer proposed this. It's amazing, isn't it? Hey, would you guys share this far and wide? I'm tired of people saying Trump is a war criminal. This is a valid and legitimate option under law. I'm Dave Hodges. This is the Common Sense Show. Make sure that you sign up for what? Hiding in Plain Sight. What's that? Well, it's our TV show. And it's Mysteries of the Mind, Repressed Technology, the Invention Secrecy Act of 1950, and what they can do to you if you're inventing things you don't like. Just ask famous inventors. Yeah, we cover that. We cover a whole lot more. People love the show. Go to thecommonsenseshow.tv. That's thecommonsenseshow.tv. And also, while you're at it, why don't you sign up for our newsletter? You don't have to come back here multiple times a day. Just get everything we do sent to you in one email. Go to the upper right-hand corner of thecommonsenseshow.com. Click on the newsletter link. Put in your email address. That's all we need. And you'll get yours. Over 50,000 people are doing it. Best of all, it is free. Dave Hodges here. We'll see you back here next time.